Call to order the regular assembly meeting in the city and borough of Wrangell, Alaska, October 14, 2014, at 7:00 p.m. The pledge of allegiance this evening will be led by Assemblymember Julie Decker. Invocation is to be given by Lynn Ogren of the Island of Faith Lutheran Church. Please remain standing for that if you would.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Almighty God, our heavenly Father, bless the public servants in the government of the city and borough of Wrangell, that they may do their work in a spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice. Help them use their authority to serve faithfully and to promote our common life through your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.
Thank you.
We're recessed assembly meeting at 7:02 and reconvene at the conclusion of the public hearing. Reopen the public hearing. Now you can continue.
Well, I pretty much said what my point was, but I'm certainly willing to field questions from the assembly. And if I'm not out of context, let's carry on.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, the way the ordinance is written, I understand what he's saying, and our intention isn't to restrict people's rights, especially those that are raising animals for subsistence at all. In the way things are written here, I don't see any place where that actually does that. We didn't put any limits on how many chickens you can own out the road or how many goats you can own or anything like that. The only limits really are what's right here in the business district.
Actually, Dan, sorry, Mr. Blake, there are restrictions in the proposed ordinance, and I did fail to bring my notes with me, but there are restrictions in the hobby portion of it, limited to 20 birds. There are limits with the commercial part, and I guess the reason I'm up here, and part of it, is that we are not just talking about dogs and cats here. The proposed ordinance, if it gets signed on the second reading and it goes through, then there you go. The last, very last thing on the sheet talks about that it will be active at the signing.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure of this, but my understanding that hobby wording we put in, and it mirrors what currently exists. A lot of the proposed ordinance currently exists. We're tweaking it, and we're adding sections here and there. So there's stuff on the books already, and what we're trying to do is go through that and make it better. That's the goal, anyway.
But do you see where I'm coming from when I say that it's not just about dogs and cats?
Right. Well, see, there's other sections that are yet to come, like we talked about, that are actually going to get into the nitty-gritty of the other animals. And that, I would think, you'd be very, very interested in being a part of.
I would be very interested in that. However, I'd like to reiterate the point that if this goes past its second reading and it gets passed, it goes in. I ask respectfully that you, if you want to keep it to dogs and cats and talk about other animals later, let's do that.
There's, and I agree with you, I'm all for, my history was, I'm a rancher for years and years, so I've raised animals, harvest animals. But you're opening a whole different realm here. Basically, we have it off leash, that most of this is talking about dogs and cats, but what if somebody comes in with a mountain lion for a pet? Or buffalo? Now, I've raised buffalo too. They'll stomp your butt in a second. So you can have dangerous animals, and I think what we're trying to do here is control the threat to other people. And I agree with you. It says animals, and it's a big, broad term.
It also says oxen.
And I wouldn't want to get in front of one of them either.
I would not, but we're not talking dogs and cats.
So we're trying hard to have this balancing act. Yeah. And I don't think anybody wants to limit your ability to feed your family or make a living.
Well, that may not be true, but if we're going to talk about the ordinance as written, and we're on the second reading, and it's going to go through, providing that you guys all vote that way, and that's going to be the end of it, it does include oxen, fowl, donkeys, horses, cattle. We're not talking dogs and cats here.
Most of the ordinances for those animals are already in place.
Then why is it in a proposal?
They're trying to redefine some of the ordinances there. I don't think, and Chief, am I wrong? Are they trying to change anything on domestic animals?
If you look at the laws, all of the animal stuff is basically designed to protect other people's property from your animals and make you confine your animals and take care of them within your property and just not allow them to run loose. If the zoning issues deal far more with what's allowed and what's not allowed in certain areas, not this. I can't think of a single thing here that limits a person's ability to raise basically whatever they want. The zoning and whatnot is where that is accomplished, and it's very much divided in and dependent on the area and the density of the population where you live as to what's considered acceptable. So I am not seeing any difference, you know, where it's going to make any difference in what a person is raising for food or pet for that matter.
I'm just reading on page 3 at the very top, and it finds it. Any person who possesses animals for personal, non-commercial purposes, which is what you're describing for your personal use, as defined in subsection T of this section, would be considered to have a hobby animal establishment, not a commercial animal establishment. And then you go over to T, and it defines a hobby animal establishment. Any property in which a person possesses houses or boards any horse, mule, donkey, or other livestock, or more than 20 adult animals other than livestock, that's not including livestock, fish or fowl, or more than 10 adult fowl, when such animals are used for personal and non-commercial purposes.
When I read that, I had got, and maybe I could be wrong about this, but when I read that, it meant I couldn't have more than 10 birds.
But it says other than livestock, fish, or fowl.
You do have a confusing lawyer. I do have to give you guys that. But so in other words, I can have as many birds as I want to.
Currently,
are going to sell them.
No. Currently, I believe under planning and zoning rules right now today, if we didn't pass this, right now today, P&Z has rules that I believe if you want more than 10, you have to go and ask them for permission, is how I remember reading it. Yeah. But so again, what we're trying to do today is mostly focus on dogs and cats and tweak what we actually already have on the books. We only have 19 pages in front of us. You mentioned 116 pages or whatever.
When I got it on the city's website
the
today.
Agenda. The complete agenda.
No, complete
Oh.
It's 116 pages long.
So, anyway, we're just looking at mostly a dog and cat thing. There are some definitions and some things about, you know, cruelty and abandonment and animals at large that do deal with more than just the dogs and cats.
All right, I'm going to pull through.
Yeah. So, but this, I think what you're more concerned about will be yet to come, is how I see it. Like the number of animals you can have and what kinds and things like that.
When I read the definition for hobby animal establishment, any property in which person houses, so on and so forth, and it mentions 20 adult animals or 10 or more adult fowl, to me that's not placing a limit on you. It's just if you have 10 or more, then you're considered a hobby animal establishment.
I'm grateful for the interpretation. It's just not the way I read it, but I'm grateful for that.
What we're trying to do is make it less restrictive than it already is currently.
You guys done looking at me?
Any more questions?
I'm good. Nope.
Thank you for your time. Anyone else to any further oral testimony on this subject? Then we'll go on to item 3B, proposed ordinance number 889, an ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending the minor offense fine schedule in chapter 1.20. General penalty of the Wrangell Municipal Code. This is a second reading. Any discussion on this item? Any written testimony? Any oral testimony? Nothing, I guess, then. We go to the final item, and that's a vote. It was during this public hearing at 7:13. Reconvene the regular assembly meeting at 7:13.
Your turn.
Item 1C, ceremonial matters. We have a certificate of service. A certificate of service, the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, presents a certificate of service to Kimmy Chrissy Smith for her service and dedication on the school board from 2010 to October 2014. Chrissy isn't here tonight, but if you would pass this over to the clerk, you will see that that's given to her. Roll call, please.
Assemblymembers Blake?
Here.
Prasanka?
Here.
Rooney?
Here.
Decker?
Here.
McCloskey? Mitchell?
Here.
And Mayor Jack?
Here. Amendments to the agenda. I'm requesting that we move item 13A on the new business after 13G. There may be some conflict on this, and I'd rather speak to an attorney to get a legal opinion on this at that time, so we should have communications with him shortly before then. So
that was 13A?
13A, move it down after 13G.
So you believe 13A is going to potentially have conflict, or 13G is going to potentially have conflict? I'm not sure where what do you
13A.
Mean? Yeah.
There may be a conflict on 13A. Okay. So we want to get an attorney's opinion.
Okay.
Is there any conflict of interest on any other items on the agenda? Consent agenda. motion on the consent agenda?
I move to approve those agenda items listed under the consent agenda and those items marked with an asterisk, items 6A and 7A.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, poll vote, please.
Assembly members Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Prisanka?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Borough managers report.
In the written report, there's some items in there that I think deserve some additional attention. The Marine Center, the current paving project is pretty much done. In addition to the pavement that was done outside the fence on Silvernail that is behind both City Market and Bay Company, that was done and as a change order to this project, and it allowed a lot of getting us out of the mud puddles there, and also provided some needed drainage for the two businesses that are adjacent to that area. So that's pretty much done. The swimming pool, as you know from previous reports, there's a lot of issues up there, and again, it's 30 years old and needs some attention. On the agenda tonight is a proposal from Jensen Yorba Lott, an architect firm, who has done a handful of other assessments on swimming pools in Southeast Alaska. They were involved in the original design of the pool in the high school, and under our rules, we're allowed to hire professional people without public bid, so that will be on your agenda later tonight. But it's approaching an area that if we don't get some of these things fixed and resolved, you know, we may have to close the pool. We're not there yet, but it's if you've seen the pool water, it's not dangerous. It's just getting to the point where it's darker and darker, and as far as safety being in it, it isn't a problem. But if it gets much darker, if someone was at the bottom of the pool in the deep end, you couldn't see them. So at that point, when we get close to that, they'll have to close the pool. So we're trying to keep it band-aid together until we can get some help, professional help here on kind of resolve some of the things. We have some, certainly have some ideas, but we want to have them, and whatever we do, we're going to have some engineering architect work done. So they'll be bringing down a mechanical engineer, they'll be bringing down an electrical engineer, because we think we have an electrolysis problem on one area, and a structural engineer. So all of those people will be part of this team to evaluate and then kind of put in order when they're done the you know, life and safety things, and Amber kind of described that in her memo in the agenda item later on. But it is a high area of concern right now that we need to really put some attention to, so we're trying to do that. And this assessment is, we do have a grant to pay for this that we got from the legislature, so that certainly helps. The next item is the capital project list that we do annually. Staff will be bringing that at the next meeting. Anything that the assembly would like to see added there, you might start thinking about that. And once we get that on here, we can have a workshop and kind of go over that, prioritize it. I'm also working on the lobbyist RFP to get sent out, and it would be a good idea once that person is on board to review this list, help us devise a strategy of how to achieve some of the goals we have. And it's going to be a difficult thing in a time when revenues are going down for the state. But we'll do our best. I've also attached kind of a staff work list to give you an idea of some of the things that the different department heads are working on. Just to show you there's a lot going on and a lot of things happening there. The impound yard, that is complete, so we can start getting some of the derelict cars out of the harbor parking lots and other areas. So I know that's been a sore spot for a while. And at this time, unless anybody has any questions, I would last ask Marla, the CEO at the hospital, to come up, and she's going to give you a brief update on the hospital process here that for the new hospital, kind of where we're at and what we've done.
And did you happen to get this? Okay, great. Can I give you one more thing to share?
You state your name and address.
Will do. Marla Sanger, CEO, Wrangell Medical Center. And can everyone hear me all right? Thank you for the opportunity to bring you an update on what is going on specifically with the Wrangell Medical Center building project. Our desire for that has not decreased. And the document that I just passed out is actually just a very brief kind of summary overview of what the hospital is, how many beds it has, and things like that. So for those of you who might not know, it's just a little bit of an overview of what the hospital is about and what we're here to do and how we're here to serve. But what I want to do is turn your attention to the document that you received ahead of time. I gave a brief overview of the history of the hospital project as I've been able to piece it together. When I arrived in Wrangell, in my office, there wasn't a single piece of paper in there. There was nothing there. It was completely had been emptied out, and there are still 27 boxes or so somewhere which were items that had been put aside and still remain in storage. And so I was able to piece together the very high-level overview here from some of the individuals that Wrangell Medical Center had contracted with to do project management, construction, and different aspects of the building project. So basically in 2006, it goes back quite a ways, the Denali Commission funded an NBBJ, which is an architectural firm that is very highly regarded nationally, to do a study on what are the facility needs relative to the healthcare facilities, and identified that there was a significant need for a new facility. In 2009, the Salmon Bay Group was engaged to begin to work on some economic impact analysis and different things. There was a feasibility study done and several other studies. A certificate of need application was completed, and the AHFD, American Health Facility Development Group, was engaged to oversee the project, and there were members of that group that also had construction responsibilities, design responsibilities, modular building responsibilities, so it was kind of a package thing. With the public input obtained and financing in place, construction was expected to start in early 2011 and be completed by the fall of 2012, which is about the time that I arrived. It stalled somewhere in between those two time periods and remains under study right now. So what we've been able to do so far, though, in 2012, I came in November, almost a year ago, or 2 years ago now, and new CFO came at the same time, and it took a while just to, I don't know if you'll recall, but at that time there was a lot of, there was still a lot of, I would say, some turmoil that remained from all of that had gone on with the billing project and other things with Wrangell Medical Center. So the first order of business was just get things stabilized and get moving forward. In 2012, this has been our most active year until now, or not 2012, but in 2012 it was our major activity, get things going again. And first we needed to really study the contracts that were in place, and also, and that went on into 2013. We discovered that some of the contracts were still in place, some of them had expired, and so part of this study was just to see what we had, what we still could use, what we could no longer use. It was very difficult to gather historical documents from the different members of the teams that had been participating in the past. And so I was able to gather enough to provide the history here and a little bit of a better understanding of what had happened and what needed to happen next. In early 2014, we recreated a new building project team consisting of employees of Wrangell Medical Center. We have Mr. J. Bush from the City Assembly. We have members from AICS. And you may recall that the original aim was to have a facility that supports an integrated healthcare delivery system, that where the two key partners, AICS and Wrangell Medical Center, would be working together. And we really learned the hard way that once the AICS organization was able to move into their new building and we no longer were co-located, what a difference it made in terms of our efficiency and our effectiveness to serve the community. Highlighted even more how important it is that we're working together, supported by a facility that we share. The original design provided for two buildings that would be side by side with some space between. They weren't joined. And you can see in your document who's all on the building planning team right now. And after about probably 3 or 4 or 5 meetings maybe, the team decided that they would like to forego the design that had been left behind and embark on a new direction. There were many, many good things in the design that existed before that we will continue to utilize, but there were certain things that we wanted to change. For example, the notion that there would be two separate buildings that were visually quite incompatible. And now the desire is to have a building next to AICS that's actually joined. We would like to have a common entry. We would like to have and these are all just concepts now, but to have a way that the community can come into the building and take care of things they most often would need to do. Maybe that would be lab, imaging, pharmacy, things that would be things that people would commonly want to do and not necessarily need to go into the clinic building or the hospital building. But there would be easy access between the buildings and it would be enclosed. That's what we would like to have. So we started putting boxes on paper, is what we called it, to get a conceptual idea of what would we want to have, borrowing heavily from what had already been done before. And then we talked about adjacencies. Well, what should go next to what? As a result of the kind of contract that the City, Borough, and Wrangell Medical Center has with Peace Health, which I'm still under, we were able to, for relatively inexpensive cost, be able to attach amendments to my agreement that allows us to purchase services at basically the person's hourly rate, their benefits, and a 5% administrative fee. Through that opportunity, we acquired the expertise of Gary Hall, who is the VP for construction and facilities for all of Peace Health. And he's been working with our team to help us envision what might be possible. Gary has helped build a lot of hospitals and healthcare facilities in California, in Oregon, Washington, and he's working on the Ketchikan project right now and helping us. So as a result of working with Gary, we began to envision there might be other options than just a single story building next door, but actually there may be some value in considering having a two-story building. There's pros and cons to that. No decision has been made. There are no architectural designs to look at yet. But by just moving things around on a piece of paper, we've come pretty close to thinking that we know what needs to be in there. And based on what staff and others have provided, what might go next to what. But it could change a lot when we start looking at architectural designs. And that at that point, we would be bringing in a lot of input from the people who actually work there, the physicians, the nurses, the housekeepers, people who do the work every day. They are the ones that are most likely to know what makes sense in terms of adjacencies and workflow. So bringing us up to date, we on September 23rd, we had Keith Perkins and Tim Krug. Keith is the area director. You probably maybe all know him for USDA. And Tim is the estate engineer, and he's had many other roles in construction. He works with USDA very closely. And they came out, they looked at the site, they looked at our conceptual drawings and met with our building project team, and we got a very favorable response from them. They indicated to us that based on what we already have right now, we could potentially start the a loan application with USDA. So we're by far not, you know, a ways down the road, but we are off to what feels like a pretty good start. There still needs to be some feasibility studies of our finances and different things, but we are making some good connections with the Rasmussen Foundation, with the 4-Acre Group, and organizations that might be able to help us get off to a good start with some pre-development. So I think I'll pause right there and see if you have questions.
I have one. When speaking to members of the public about the new hospital building, the question that comes up more often than not from almost everybody that I talk to is, once this new facility is completed, is it going to include a birthing center? Can mothers, expectant mothers here in Wrangell, at some point or another, be able to expect to have babies here in Wrangell, not have to go to Ketchikan or up to Anchorage to do it?
Well, my answer is, I wish that could happen right now. And maybe sometime or another it can. The barrier that exists that prevents us from doing that right now is that in today's world, where healthcare is expected to be evidence-based, which means that there's a lot of research out there now, and it's available to everyone, that says how to perform medical care in a way to most likely achieve the best outcome. And one of the areas that's extremely high risk is in the area of obstetrics and birthing. And it's not just high risk for the mother, but for the infant as well. My background is infant intensive care, so I am keenly aware, after 17 years of taking care of tiny babies on ventilators, how high risk it really can be. So the problem is, if you don't have an anesthesiologist in the community where you're doing births, you need a C-section, you cannot perform a C-section. And to not have the facilities available and still be marketing that you can perform those services, it would be considered to be irresponsible. So that is the problem. Now, if the community were to have enough growth that we could have maybe a nurse anesthetist even, or an anesthesiologist, that would change things potentially very much, but that's the situation that we're in.
Okay.
Other questions?
Have any questions?
I have a question. Yes. What about the old certificate of need that you get from the state? Is that still viable, or does that process have to start completely over again?
It has to start over again. It's no longer viable. But it won't be like starting completely over, because a lot of the work that was already done is still useful. In addition to that, I've talked with Kent Hodges, who's the CEO at Ketchikan Medical Center. They recently went through this certificate of need process with the new people who are at the state that are doing it now. And they had a person that worked with them that was so highly capable that by the time it was done, it just flew right through. So we might access some expert resource like that, but I don't think it will be as difficult. The other thing that it took a long time before, because it was all ready to go, and then there were some, I believe it actually went through and was approved, and then there were some changes and different things. So, you know, we hope not to go through that kind of situation. Great questions.
Any further questions?
Just a question on financing for the hospital. Mm-hmm. Are you putting back on the table mortgaging the hospital for any length of time, or is that off of the table and we're strictly looking at funding this as through grants and available funds?
Well, there's not grant funding is very difficult to obtain now. At the time when the hospital, the prior time, there was some money available through the stimulus activity that was going on in the United States. That's no longer the case. From people that I've talked to, I think that it's not the kind of situation that people want to give money for. We may be able to get some help through the Rasmussen Foundation, but not big sums of money. So yes, I believe it was actually going to be mortgaged before, through first HUD, and then I think then they had switched to USDA, and they did get the loan for that. The USD has indicated to me more than once that they have a fair amount of money to lend, and the interest rates are very favorable right now, and they're granting fairly long terms. So I don't really know another way. I wish I did, but that's where we're at right now.
Follow-up question to that?
Sure, go ahead.
So given that our hospital is cost-based reimbursement mm-hmm. as a critical access hospital, have you put pen to paper or thoughts on, or is there a possibility for a workshop for our community on what the overall cost through increased reimbursements to the hospital, because it's cost-based, and I would imagine you'd be able to recoup your mortgage costs and possibly payments as a part of that, what that will do to the average person's bill when they go to the hospital?
What it'll do to the bill yet, it is not known, but it's not our aim to have it change our charges significantly. But so there were about three questions there. Let me try to mm-hmm. unpack it. The cost-based financing structure is something that I hadn't worked with before. I've worked in bigger hospitals where we didn't have that advantage. It is a helpful thing. It's what helps communities like this have a hospital. And we really need a hospital here. I can't tell you how much. I just will say that when I came here, I wasn't sure in a town this size there would be enough revenue generating patients to pay the bills. We've been pretty full most of the time since I've been here, and long-term care especially. So I can't imagine what Wrangell would do without a hospital. Seeing all those people that I see every day would have to be somewhere else. That would be a huge hardship. So I think we need to find a way to make it work, not only for that reason, for the health care of our community, but also if you take AICS and Wrangell Medical Center and put them together, the two organizations working together, which is what we're doing, we're getting a lot closer and much more affiliated in terms of how we do things for the community so that there's not waste and so that it's efficient. We probably represent at least 25% of the total payroll here, and that doesn't even include the multiplier effect, so it's really an important thing. So back to the cost-based financing, it is 101%, but not for everything. I'm still learning about this. So there are certain things, and hopefully the entire cost of the building would be included in that, but it doesn't include everything. So we need a real thorough financial analysis of what would it look like at the end. Are we credit worthy, you know, given everything that's gone on and what we need to do? So those questions still need to be answered. And yes, we would definitely want to have all of that be shared with the community. This is a community hospital. It's a municipal hospital. And the community has a right to know as much as we know to be partners in this. So, and I'm not sure I got every...
My third thing was, have you thought about, I'm just quite frankly amazed at the number of people that don't understand how our costs are derived from our hospital, and everybody complains about, you know, the long-term care is so expensive, but you know, I mean, in terms of, that's almost an artificial propping by the federal government. So my question is, will there be an opportunity for the community to learn about, will you be able to present it to us in a dumbed down fashion mm-hmm. so that I can understand what my cost for my deductible when I go up there and get stitches in the ER, mm-hmm. what is the increase because we have a new building versus, you know, this size building, that size building, renovating the old building? Will you be able to do that for the community?
I would not call it a dumbed down version. I think that the people in Wrangell will be able to grasp the concepts.
I was referring to myself, not anybody else.
I understand, but I'm referring to you. You'll be able to absorb whatever it is we share. But we need to unpack it again. It can't be the whole thing high level all at once. It's very complicated. It's extremely complicated, such that our reimbursement is tied to when a facility goes into service, for instance, because they adjust like every 3 to 4 years. So if you put your building into service at a time when they just made the adjustment the previous year, you might have to go be okay for 3 years at a much lower reimbursement rate. There are many things like that that I'm still learning about. But that's the kind of thing that we would want the community to know so that we can have the partnership of the community in going forward. I don't expect it, Steve, to affect the percentage of your bill that goes to, you know, depending on your insurance, how much of it is out of pocket or how much of it is to your deductible or anything like that, don't anticipate that that percentage would be greatly different, but that'll be one of the things that we need to study.
Yes, Julie.
First, Marla, I want to congratulate you on getting the medical center and AICS to work closer together. I think that's something that the community needs and wasn't happening before for a variety of reasons, and it's good to see. I hope that continues.
Thank you, and it will.
I wanted to ask, though, along the lines of the financial question, I think it's really important. Do you have any idea how you would move forward with the feasibility? Or, I mean, would you put, there's some issues about the, I don't know a lot of the details of this issue in particular, so I'm learning it as well, but I think there were some issues with the financing company or contractor in the past, and so I'm just curious how you would approach that, the financial feasibility.
I have a couple thoughts on that. I sometimes like to think about things in a way that makes sense from just a day-to-day, my own personal day-to-day experience, and so I would like to get some kind of a rough cut analysis such that if I were going to buy a house or an apartment building or something like that, I could go and talk about, here's what I make, here's what I owe, here's how much money I have in the bank, how much can I afford? And we would like to get an answer to that question before we spend a lot of money on an in-depth feasibility study. So I'll be, I'm talking back and forth with Marty Michaels, who is well known in the area for doing Medicare cost reports. He does our cost report, he's done it for years. He knows everything about our finances just like our auditors do. So I'm hoping to get some help that way. And then also, if we're able to get some assistance from the 4-Acre Group, they do pre-development assistance. They might be able to help us as well. So we will need to have those things done. The thing that you're remembering from the past was there was an agency that worked with Wrangell Medical Center to their purpose of the agency was to seek funding, and they accomplished that. They were able to get funding from the USDA. And so that piece of their work was done. They had some other work products that would have continued to be performed, but then when the building stalled, that all went on hold. So right now we're looking to get help as much as we can without having it be very costly. There is still some money from an original grant that existed, but about $3 million has already been spent before I came on all the things that I just talked about. Some of those things we can still get value out of them, but some of the things we cannot.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you.
And feel free to call me at any time if you want to speak further.
Do you have anything further?
No.
Any questions or comments from Jeff?
I have one question for Jeff. This letter that we received in our packet from the law offices of Karen Elephant concerning SEPA and avoided cost data, has that been taken care of by SEPA?
I think they're working on that.
Because they gave them a 10-day suspense, and this is dated September 23rd.
No, I've been told that that is something that they are working on and have contacted them. But yes, it's okay. Being worked on.
Anything further? For Porch Line.
I have a correction to the SEPA board meeting that will be held in Petersburg. It actually will not be this month. It will be next month, November 13th and 14th, and they will not have a meeting in December. I have started advertising for the voting member seat for the SEPA board, as well as the alternate member seat for SEPA. This is the year we have one, not two. So, and that those two appointments will be made at the next assembly meeting on October 28th. And we had a good election. 23% turnout. Last year was 46%, but everything went smooth. So, Also, just wanted to let the assembly members know and the boards and committees that are interested, and of course we'll be advertising for this, that our attorney's office is going to be coming here and giving a parliamentary training on December the 11th. So I will, don't have to write it down or anything, I'll remind you. So just wanted to kind of get that out there.
And that will be for all the boards?
That'll be for the borough assembly and all of the boards and commissions of the city and borough of Ringle. And that's all I have.
Any questions or comments?
Oh, one more thing. If anybody else is interested in going to AML, let me know. I have three, I have the mayor going, as well as Assemblymember Prasanka, and Assemblymember Rudy.
Congratulations on your appointment.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
You stole my line.
Sorry.
No, but I also want to say, where is your one procedural tip for the assembly packet?
I didn't.
I noticed.
I had a lot on there, so I didn't include that. But don't worry, it'll be there next time.
Okay.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank goodness, I was worried.
Just don't forget it.
I won't forget it.
Anything further? Thank you.
Thanks.
Item 10, Mayor Assembly reports and appointments. Does anyone, assembly member, have any report to make? Item 10B, elect a vice mayor.
I'll make a motion to appoint Daniel Blake as the vice mayor.
Second.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, moved and seconded. Any comments or discussion? Roll call, please.
Assembly members McCloskey?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Prasanka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Appointment of an assembly member as a hospital board liaison. I have been doing that in the interim. Does anyone have any interest in being the hospital liaison?
I would be interested in that, but I may have a conflict as my wife has a contract with the hospital for their long-term care and swing bed director. So I don't know if that would be considered a conflict or not.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, my comment on that is, you know, he's not making any decisions or anything. He's just funneling information back and forth, and this body would make a decision. If we ever make a decision on the hospital, you'd probably have to not vote.
Just thought I'd bring it up.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The liaison has no voting power or anything like that. Doesn't have a vote. It's an informative position.
You left this
backwards and forth is what it is. Then I will appoint you to that, and I have the packet here for the next meeting.
I think that's a good choice.
No, that was good.
You're prepared.
Yes. City board and committee appointments. We have Planning and Zoning Commission, two vacancy, 3-year terms. And we have letters received for that from Don McConica Sr. and Dorothy Huntswell. Do we have any others? We have the two vacancies and two letters of interest. I'll go ahead and appoint those two to those boards, that commission. Parks and Recreation Board, there are two vacancies for 3-year term, and we have three letters of interest, the one from Cindy Martin, Grover Mathis, and Holly Owens. It was my understanding that Grover Mathis resigned, didn't he?
He was thinking about it, but he pulled his resignation. we pulled this resignation and submitted a letter of interest, so.
Well, him and Cindy Martin are in comments and they know what's going on there. I will go ahead and reappoint those two to that board. And please express appreciation for Holly Owens for putting in her letter of interest. Wrangell Convention and Visitors Board. There's two vacancies for 3-year terms, and there's two letters of interest, Leslie Cummings and Corey Delagru. So we'll go ahead and appoint those two to that board. Economic Development Committee, we have two vacancies, 3-year terms, and there's three letters of interest, Kim Cobalt, Julie Decker, and Chris Hatton. I think it would be advisable, it would be a good thing to have an assembly member on that board. I think it could be a very advantageous thing. So I would go ahead and appoint Kim Cobalt and Julie Decker to us. And again, express gratitude to Chris Hatton for her letter of interest. Now the NOLA Museum Civic Center Board, there's one vacancy for the 3-year term, and no one has turned in a letter of interest for that board. Does anyone in the audience have any interest in that? And just simply members. Well, we continue to advertise for that. Item 11, persons to be heard.
And there are no persons to be heard.
Then we move on to unfinished business. Item 12A, proposed ordinance number 887 as amended, an ordinance of the city assembly of the city and borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending and adding a new chapter and new sections to Title 7 of the Wrangell Municipal Code, Animals. This is the second reading of the amendment.